Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
You know, nature has given us some solutions to these issues. And so when we invest in growing and supporting nature and the natural elements that allow for resilience, we will cover a number of things.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
We're on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Got this show, comedy skits, and live news reaction. We'll have another one of those probably coming up this week. Just subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and you'll know when we go live. Justin Haskins is here. He's got a book out with Glenn Beck. We're going to talk about that. Kamala continues to crank out voter bait ahead of November 5th. I'll tell you what she's doing with the minimum wage. But we start by doing Kamala's dangerous medical advice. And I wanted to make sure I did this before the election because it's really, really important. One of the big fear campaigns by the Democrats right now is about abortion, of course. This is their big topic. They love talking about children not quite getting to the point where they get born alive. This is a big thing that they love. They love to prevent that and love to give you the opportunity to prevent it at any point during a pregnancy that you might want to prevent it. That's an issue for me. Morally, I think it's just generally wrong, having nothing to do with morals, to end another human being's life. It's just not a good thing to do. But the Democrats are really pushing hard to try to scare people into thinking, especially women, into thinking they can't get the medical treatment they need. And this is a big part of their campaign. So I want to debunk some of this. And look, not the most comfortable topic, but I do think it's really important, especially the way they're prioritizing this in their messaging. Now, one of the ways they've done this is with a case revolving around Amber Thurman. We've covered this before. I think it's called Kamala's Abortion Lies. You can go back and watch that show. She's from Georgia, but just kind of review her case. She left Georgia where she could not get an abortion at the time of her pregnancy that she was in. She went to another state, got abortion pills, took them, came back, was told, you know, everything's going to be fine. No big deal. She took them, had a very, very big deal. And she wound up going to the hospital. They didn't treat her for a long time, and she wound up dying. Now, she didn't go to the hospital because of the Georgia abortion law. She went to the hospital because the pills she was told were going to be totally innocuous wound up putting her in a situation where she needed to go to the hospital. This is not an abortion law killing Amber Thurman. This was an abortion killing Amber Thurman. This is really what happened, and it is important for you to know that. It's also important for you to know that at no point was she at any danger legally from getting an abortion out of state and coming back in and getting medical treatment if that abortion went wrong, as so many do. In fact, just to give you this, John McCormick has done a lot on this. We've highlighted his work before. But if you look at the law, it specifically talks about causing the death of an unborn child. This was not an unborn child. This is a child that was already had already died because of the abortion, but had not evacuated. So sepsis was becoming an issue. The law only prevents an abortion with a detectable human heartbeat. It mentions that several times in the law. And an unborn child would, of course, make you aware that the child had already needs to be alive and have a heartbeat if these laws are going to be into effect. It's important to understand that. Now, ProPublica wrote about all this. They wrote in misleading ways, but they did eventually kind of come around to admitting it. The law prohibits doctors from using any instrument with the purposes of terminating a pregnancy. Well, if the baby's already died from a previous abortion in another state, you might be wildly aware by that description that you're not terminating a pregnancy. The baby is not alive anymore, so you're not terminating it. That's the part that people have problems with. No one has problems with evacuating a fetus that is no longer alive. That's not something that is on anybody's radar. No one wants to prevent that. We want to keep the women alive, even if they make a choice that we don't like, you know, and that happens to be one of them. And just to make this completely clear, that Georgia had nothing, it had nothing to do with the law, we look at the case of Eliana Dixon, family of a Nevada woman who died of sepsis taking abortion pills, is suing for wrongful death. Eliana Dixon was 24, died September 28th, 2022. The cause of death was complications from a septic abortion, said her attorney. Now, you might note that Nevada does not have the Georgia abortion law. In fact, you can kind of do whatever you want, whenever you want in Georgia. But these things happen often to women who go through this process thinking, because of the way the media talks about this, a couple of different things. Number one, that the abortion pills are completely safe for them and it's going to be basically nothing. They describe it as, just a double period is one way it's been discussed, which is, you know, not something I really want to talk about, honestly, but is a situation where you think, okay, it's not that big of a deal. So that's number one. And number two, if something does go wrong with one of these abortions, as it often does, and we're about to get into that, you can go get medical treatment and not worry about any law in America. Really, really important that women understand that. If you have a woman in your life that, God forbid, has gone down this road and is having these problems, please let them know, because the media is not going to do that. They're going to do the exact opposite of that. They're going to try to hide that information from them because they want political points. It's disgusting. So let me go to Caitlin Collins. Caitlin Collins is, of course, on CNN. This is a discussion they had a few months ago about mifepristone. And they were going back and forth about, hey, how does this, you know, is this a safe drug? Does this hurt people? Is it, you know, this is going on, and it's in relation to the Supreme Court case that we don't have time to fully dive into. But she makes a couple of claims in there. I want to talk about it. Listen.
Penicillin is more dangerous than mifepristone, and that's plenty used in the United States. That's not being argued before the Supreme Court.
Caitlin, that's actually not true in the sense of what the FDA's own statistic. No, it's not. What the FDA's own statistics and documents say are that up to 7% of women are going to have surgical interventions. In just 2020, the FDA said that an in-person doctor visit is not only minimally burdensome on a patient, but it's necessary. And they explicitly said that thousands of women are presenting with severe complications as a result of taking this drug. This isn't me saying it. It's what the FDA has said. What they say in court now is very different than what their own data tells you.
I mean, it's a widely used pill. It's quite safe.
That's how the media covers this. Widely used pill. It's quite safe. And, you know, you never know what the background is here. You know, sometimes you might have a friend who's used it and had a good experience with it. Someone they know closely may have had, that type of thing. It's not to say that every single person who takes mifepristone has a terrible health consequence, with the exception of the fact that the baby is to be discussed here a little bit. And the whole effective part of the baby is ending the baby's life. And the effective part of mifepristone and the safe part of mifepristone does not address the fact that a baby is dying. So we're going to take that out of the equation here for now. You might feel that way. I feel that way. But let's take that out of the equation for now and talk about where this went. So someone who is on the pro-life side of this pointed out CNN's Caitlin Collins repeatedly claims on air that chemical abortion drugs are safe. Caitlin Collins responds, because mifepristone is, and gives a quote, data from hundreds of studies and 23 years of approved use have shown that mifepristone is highly safe and effective. According to 12 of the country's most respected medical associations, mifepristone's safety is on par with those of common over-the-counter pain relievers like ibuprofen and acetaminophen, or Tylenol, studies show. Really? Is it? Now, does that forget for just a moment all the stats I'm about to bring up? And just, does that pass the sniff test to you? Have you ever had Tylenol? Have you ever had Advil? Do you think that's has a safety profile equal to the abortion drug? Do you think that? But no, experts are telling you it, so it must be so. And she cites a specific article from her own organization that obviously is wildly pro-choice, so that's a whole different situation. But it's called, What is Mifepristone? Yes, what is it? What is it? And here is the kind of key paragraph in the article. She mentions the safety on the levels of ibuprofen and Tylenol. Major adverse events like blood loss, hospitalization, or a significant infection are exceedingly rare, happening in less than 0.3% of patients, according to the Medical Association's amicus brief. Okay, that isn't a lot. really not a lot. 0.3% doesn't seem that high, right? And I guess that's when we're just supposed to stop thinking, right? At that point, that's the point. Well, how many abortions, how many times are these drugs used in America? Let's look at that first. They're ramping up quickly, boys and girls. Ah, it looks like the global warming hockey stick chart. We are now up to 63% of abortions in this country are because of these drugs. So we do have a lot of information on them. And, you know, of course, there are many, many different summaries as to how many major adverse effects you will have. 0.3% is, of course, what you're getting from people who are very much in favor of these drugs. Organizations that don't agree with their use have much higher numbers, but let's use their numbers. I think that's important. Let's just use their numbers. We'll act like they are 100% accurate. And we find out how many abortions that 63% of abortions are. Guttmacher Institute research from the Monthly Abortion Provision Study shows that there were approximately 642,700 medication abortions in the United States in 2023. That is a horrific statistic. 642,000 children that should be alive today and are not. That in and of itself is enough reason to oppose this, of course, in my view, but we're not doing that. We're going with the Caitlin Collins view. So who knows what her view is. But we do know that 0.3% of 642,700 is about 1,928 major adverse events. And that's, you know, a significant amount, but isn't like, you know, it's, you know, it's not as they would say, an epidemic, right? It's about 2,000 women. That's a lot. I mean, especially if they happen to be your daughter or your loved one. It's a lot to see them go through something terrible like that, but 1,928. And you think, well, wait a minute. I mean, measuring that up to like Tylenol, you have to think that's got to be lower than Tylenol. And it is. There's actually 26,000 hospitalizations every year due to Tylenol. So you can see where they get this. It's safer than Tylenol. You've heard that quote over and over and over again from left-wing politicians. Well, it's true. Only 1,928 from the abortion pills and 26,000. From Tylenol, but the issue is kind of scale here. And that's where we get into the problem with their analysis, the scale of use of these particular drugs. Now, I want to point out for just a moment here, the effective part of safe and effective. These drugs are safe and effective. How effective are they? Pretty effective. Pretty effective. But stop and think about what that means for a second. U.S. studies say the two-step medication regime, which includes mifepristone, is effective about 95% of the time. Now, that's a high number when you talk about percentage, but what does that mean? It means that over 32,000 times when you take these drugs in this country, 32,000 women every year are taking these drugs for an abortion that doesn't take. That's a lot. 32,000 times. We all know that they were just talking about, 26,000 hospitalizations from Tylenol and acting like that was this big thing. Well, 32,000 times this is happening to women in 642,000 abortion attempts. I think that's significant, but it goes faster than that because when you think about the safe part of it, we mentioned 1,928 major adverse health effects. Well, the scale is important here. 642,700 uses of medical abortion pills in this country that leads to those 1,928 major adverse health effects. But a Tylenol is used a little bit more frequently, boys and girls. There are 8 billion uses of Tylenol. That's not 8 billion pills, that's 8 billion doses, okay? So in 8 billion doses of Tylenol, you're getting 26,000 hospitalizations. It's 642,000 medical abortion bill usages. You're getting 1,928. Well, what does that mean for the rate of medical health events, major ones, and hospitalizations for these two drugs? Well, Tylenol, it's 1 in 333,333 people who use Tylenol are dealing with that hospitalization. That is really, really rare. It makes sense, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like 1 in 333,000 people are having that issue with abortion, right? Well, it's because it's not, okay? Those hospitalizations, those major adverse health effects for abortion, the risk of it happening is 1 in 300. Now, stop and look at that number for a second. One in 300. How many times have you taken Tylenol in your freaking life? Has it been over 300? Probably. Do you know 300 people in your life that have taken Tylenol and not gone to the hospital for it? Quite obviously, it's a lot easier to go to the hospital from an abortion pill than it is from Tylenol. We all know that immediately from common sense. We've all taken Tylenol a zillion times, and my guess is you haven't gone to the hospital from it. Why do I guess that? Well, because there's a little bit more. It's even worse than this. It's even worse than 1,000 times the risk, because that is what I just laid out to you. The abortion pill is 1,000 times more risky to deal with these major adverse health effects than it is when it comes down to Tylenol. But it's actually worse than that. Why? Because almost all hospitalizations with Tylenol are due to overdose, not using it the right way, not using a couple pills when you got a headache, but using maybe dozens of pills, maybe not looking at the labels, maybe using it in multiple medications you weren't aware of, right? Like you take cold medication, it has a bunch of acetaminophen in it, then you take Tylenol, then you take another medication, they've all got acetaminophen in it, you don't realize it, you overdose, you go to the hospital. Almost every single hospitalization due with Tylenol has to do with an overdose. Of course, exactly none of the abortion pill hospitalizations have to do with an overdose. People aren't getting hospitalized from mifepristone because they take 14 abortion pills. That's not how that works. They're taking it as directed and going to the hospital. Safe and effective is quite a far distance from what we're talking about here. This is not only 95% deadly to the child it's applied to, but it is hitting women as well with major negative health effects. And I want to give you a woman who actually went through this, thought it was as safe as Tylenol. I will give you a bit of a warning. This is a little bit difficult to listen to, but it is important considering the Democrats are making these tactics central to their election pitch. Listen.
In 2010, I was prescribed the abortion drugs, and I was not prepared for how severe and devastating those drugs were going to be. And I found myself on the bathroom floor, covered in a pool of blood, wondering if I was going to survive the procedure completely alone, until I reached down and lifted out of my body the perfectly formed transparent sac with a recognizable baby inside. And it was so incredibly traumatic. I suffered horrific side effects, not only physical in the moment of the procedure, but to this day, I still suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's something that has followed me since that day.
The reason not to use mifepristone is because you're ending an innocent human life. That is the reason not to do it. It's a terrible decision that many women feel forced into making, but aren't. And there are plenty of organizations out there that can help you if you happen to be in a moment like this where you think that's the right decision. It's never the right decision to end an innocent human life for no reason. It's just not. That doesn't mean going through all of the process is easy. There are very difficult decisions to be made. I don't mean to downplay them. But it's never the right decision to punish an innocent human life to make that go forward, no matter what situation is going on. I will say, the reason why I bring this up, because the Democrats are making this a central part of what's going on, lives are at stake here because of misinformation and disinformation regarding these topics. It's really, really important that you understand the truth. It's really, really important if you happen to be in a moment where you're thinking about using these drugs, that these are absolutely not as safe as Tylenol. Common sense makes this blatantly obvious to anyone who's ever lived in the country and taken basic pain medication. Everybody knows this. But now you know way more detail than you ever wanted to know about it. It is not as safe as Tylenol. This is a very, very serious thing you're doing to your body, number one. And number two, if you go through this process and you decide to use mifepristone, and you are convinced because of the left-wing media and people like Kamala Harris that you are banned legally from getting medical attention, just know that's a lie. Please go get medical attention. There is not a single law in the United States that would prevent you or give you any legal consequence for searching for medical help when you need it in cases like this. Not one single law, no matter what the left has told you, no matter how mean they say the governor of Texas is, none of it is true. The left and the media are scaring women to death, literally, because of this. They are scaring women into believing they can't go to the hospital because of laws like this. They are telling you. They're scaring doctors into not giving treatment. None of that is true. At no point ever will you ever face legal consequences because of getting medical help that you need as it relates to a failed abortion, which, by the way, happens a lot more than they're telling you. So at the very least, if God forbid you make a decision that ends a human life, which is not going to be the right one, and you're not going to like it later on in life, probably. But even if you make that decision, you can still be helped by doctors. Your life is really, really important, even if you make a decision I don't like. But also consider, if you haven't made that decision yet, that the life that you're about to end is really important, too. All right, well, we all know that going into incognito mode basically means nobody can see what you're doing, right? Unfortunately, no, that's not right at all. If you, your online activity is still 100% visible to a ton of third parties. Unless you have ExpressVPN, your internet service provider, your mobile network provider, your Wi-Fi network administrators, they can all see every website that you visit, regardless of whether you go into incognito mode or not. Now, maybe you feel like you got nothing to hide, which is great, but the truth is it's still your information. You own it. It doesn't belong to anyone else, and you should be protecting it at all times from prying eyes from those who might misuse it. This is why you need ExpressVPN. It's easy to use. It works on all devices, and it would take a hacker with a supercomputer over, I mean this sincerely, a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. And by the way, when I say easy, I want you to know how easy it is. I've got it on my phone. I use it all the time, ExpressVPN. Awesome. See how it says it's red at the top? That means I'm not connected to ExpressVPN. I'm vulnerable right now. All I have to do is press this little button right here and see how it turns green. Now I'm on ExpressVPN. It's that easy to connect yourself. I know I'm too lazy to go through a big process, so that's really important to me. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/stew. expressvpn.com/stew. You're going to get an extra 3 months for free right now. Check it out. Protect yourself. EXPRESS, expressvpn.com/stew.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung, nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
Well, it is book release week for our own Glenn Beck, and that means he's out promoting it on shows that he actually cares about. Instead, he's sending me Justin Haskins, who is actually the person who knows what's actually in the book. Glenn writes these books and forgets about them after like 2 weeks. Justin has worked really hard in researching all of this and is a co-author of the book. He's a senior fellow at the Heartland Institute. The book is Propaganda Wars, How the Global Elite Control What You See, What You Think, What You Feel. And it just dropped yesterday. Be sure to grab a copy wherever your books are sold. I have my copy right here. I'm very happy to have it. Justin, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you again.
It's an important topic, especially now. Can you, back up, okay, 6 months, a year ago when you decided to write this book. Why did you go this direction?
Yeah, so one of our big fears going into this election, we started this a year ago. So this is way pre-Joe Biden dropping out.
Right,
this
is a
lot of stuff has happened.
Yes.
Pre-Trump getting shot in the head.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff has happened.
Mm-hmm.
We were concerned that there was going to be another huge propaganda event right around the time of the election that could cause massive discord in society, riots, questions about the validity of the election, and what's the fallout of the election going to be. The last two or three presidential elections, or the last two in particular, have been full of this. Mm-hmm. And we wanted people to be prepared. We wanted people to know who are the main sources of these propaganda efforts. Who is sowing discord in the United States of America? How do they do it? How can you protect yourself from this kind of propaganda? How do you know what's real and what isn't real when you're watching the news, you open up your phone, you're on social media? Can we systematize it? Can we come up with a series of steps that you could take so that a person could see something and say, okay, I'm not just going to believe this automatically. I'm going to run this through a set of, you know, tests, and I'll be able to know whether there's a good chance this is true or not, or that I can't know. And that's a good thing as well. And so going into the election, we thought that that was just absolutely vital. And when you read the book, I think you'll see that anyone who's watching, like I think you're going to see there is so much in it that you have no idea is going on. There are so many forces at work spreading propaganda, doing it in really elaborate ways, not just here in the United States, but especially overseas. It's a huge, huge problem with foreign interference, not just in elections, but in our society generally. And people need to be aware of it and prepared to fight back against it.
Because if you think about the arc of the way our relationship as Americans has developed with the media, like if you go back to the Walter Cronkite days, there's a few different sources and pretty much everyone just sees it and believes it, right? Like that's the beginning and ending of it. Over time, obviously, some alternative media, maybe starting with talk radio and through the internet, have come up to, I think there was a point where people now look at like a mainstream media news story and say, well, what aren't they telling me? Is that the right, is that spin work? Where is it? They're a little skeptical of this, but that doesn't even approach really where we're going in this process. Like, it seems like it's not just no longer the media being a little bit biased in one way or the other. We're talking about potentially completely fraudulent material now being promoted at just the right time to influence an election.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the sources, not just in media that we used to be able to trust, because that ship sailed a long time ago. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Nobody on our side of things, pro-liberty people, we don't trust the New York Times to just automatically give us the truth. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but certainly around an election, we wouldn't assume it. But we can't trust, I mean, really any major institution anymore. I mean, we've seen this with the last election. We saw that with the Hunter Biden laptop scandal and the way the government was colluding secretly with social media companies to stop people from talking about it. You had national security people and intelligence people coming out saying this is Russian disinformation when it obviously turned out it wasn't Russian disinformation, right? So we can't even trust the government to tell us the truth about these things. Not even the national security type people, we can't just assume that they're telling us the truth anymore. Mm-hmm. And so how can anyone know? And that's what we wanted to do. So really what the book does, it's unlike any book that Glenn has ever done, because what he really wanted to do is not just give people some tools to know what's true and what isn't. He wanted people to be able to fight back against it themselves. It's a training guide for here's how you do the kinds of things that Glenn and his team and you do on a daily basis. How can we make this something that's easily digestible, you know, so that we can help people go discover new stories that they don't know about. And also at the same time, when a story comes to them, they're able to know, okay, I'm not sure if I should believe this. I'm going to wait and see how this all pans out. And then what we did was take some of the emerging issues, some of the biggest problems that we think are coming our way soon. And we give people like deep fakes, for example, election interference issues, yeah. Social media, you know, not just social media bias, but really crazy social media stuff. We give them all kinds of new information on those topics that you're not going to get anywhere else, and give people the ability to, it's sort of as a warning for here are the problem areas ahead and here's what you need to know about them. You couple that with all of the training that's at the beginning of the book, and you're going to be really prepared for what's happening in this election season.
Yeah, because when you understand the structures of how these things happen and the way that they happen, you can spot it, right? Like it's not impossible, at least at this point, for this stuff to be called out. There is a point in our future where I think it's going to become increasingly even more difficult. I mean, you mentioned Russian disinformation, and you go back to 2016, right? You know, they tried to place some Facebook ads, right? Okay. Have you ever fallen for a Facebook ad? They try to do that. They try, Russia really did try to do those things. But on top of that, and I think what people, especially on our side of the equation, remember most is just sort of like the fake accusations of collusion between Donald Trump and Russia, this fake Russia hoax.
Yeah.
And like, that's really important that we call that out and what was false there. There is, though, in addition to that, Russia and many other countries are actually trying to do, Iran's another one, trying to do things from foreign lands to influence our election. And with the assistance of a bunch of the technologies that I know you go through in the book, we are susceptible to this. I mean, I think it's really possible. I mean, could we see something a couple days before an election, like a deep fake that could really influence the way the things turned out?
Yeah, I mean, we know for sure that this could happen because it's happened in many countries around the world. Americans have a tendency to not pay attention to what's going on in other
proudly,
parts of the-
proudly, Justin.
Yeah, but yeah, and I don't blame them. I'm one of them. I get it.
Yeah.
But in a lot of elections over the past 2 years, we've seen this trend of right before the election, there is some sort of misinformation or deep fake story that breaks. It isn't clear at that moment. Very similar to the Hunter Biden laptop story where there's this questions emerging. Yeah. Like, is this true? Is this not true? I don't know if I can believe it. Happens right before the election. And the problem with deep fakes is deep fake technology makes it look like or sound like a person is saying things or doing things that they're not actually saying or doing. Mm-hmm. And so when you see a candidate who you're about to vote for or against say something crazy, like, for example, in a 2023 election in Slovakia, they had a high-profile election at the national level, and one of the candidates was caught supposedly saying, talking about buying seats and all kinds of crazy things related to
corruption.
The election. Yeah, really extreme levels of corruption happened right before the election, and people didn't know what to do with this. And some people believed it, and some people did not, and it had an actual measurable outcome on that race, people think. So this can be, and it's happened in the United States too. We had a mayoral race in Chicago in 2023, where a deep fake for one of the Democratic candidates seemed to show that candidate saying really bad things about African Americans and the police and stuff like that. And the other Democratic candidate, who was the dark horse in the race, ended up winning. We don't know how much the deep fake impacted that. Maybe it did. Maybe
never
it
didn't. Know, really.
You never can know. But we know that it happened right around that time in 2024 in New Hampshire, presidential primary for the Democrats. A deep fake of Joe Biden was distributed. Phone calls were sent out to all these different people, Democrat voters, saying, don't waste your vote, in Joe Biden's voice, don't waste your vote on this election. I need it for the general election, as if you only get one chance to vote and you have to vote either in the primary or the general election. Doesn't really make sense, but someone who hears that may not understand what it is. That turned out to be a Democratic operative who did that. I mean, so there's a lot, this stuff is happening. Mm. And if it happens right before this election, what are people going to do? And what is the fallout? And I think what's really important is the propaganda we're concerned with is not just the event itself, but how are political parties in the wake of that event going to use it for their own purposes? In the same way that we saw Democrats take the Facebook ad thing from Russia and turn that into a years-long Russian collusion investigation, if there is a Russian deepfake that drops a day before the election and Trump ends up winning and this deepfake was believed to help him win, what is the consequence of that going to be? How are they going to use that? People need to be prepared for this. They need to think about this beforehand, because if they do, it's less likely that a crisis will emerge from one of these things. But if half the country just has no idea that a deep fake, what it is or who's behind it or how it could be used, it's really easy for people to manipulate it.
Now, I know you would not indulge in any pessimism. I know that's not you at all.
I'm extremely optimistic.
Extremely optimistic person generally. I mean, you work with Glenn Beck. How could you be anything other?
Exactly.
But like, I have no doubt that people who will read this book, who will buy this book, people who listen to this show, people who listen to Glenn's show, those people want to know how to get to the bottom of these things. And they will look this book, they will get tools that will help them do that, and they will be forces for good in this entire chaotic scenario you're talking about. But like, part of me also thinks that there's an element here where it's like, you know, telling me that I can get into shape with good, with healthy food and exercise. Well, yeah, sure, I could. I'm not going to. We all know that's not going to happen. And I feel like just looking at the American people right now, they don't seem to have any interest whatsoever in actually trying to figure this out. They want to read what's going on. You know, they read stuff on social media. They jump to the conclusions they want to jump to. Almost always, it backs up their prior beliefs. Yep. And if a video comes out of Donald Trump saying something terrible, people on the left are just going to believe it. And, you know, there's some of that goes on with the right, too. If Kamala Harris says there's some deep fake, they're going to believe it. How do you, like, spread this other than just obviously writing the book and letting people understand it and hopefully, you know, push it around to their friends and everything else? How do you solve this at a societal level?
Oh, boy, that's a difficult question. But I think the...
Now, did
the,
I find pessimism?
No, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's not hard, honestly. Yeah. I think the main issue is our society is at a breaking point. And I think most people on the right and the left, if they're being honest, will acknowledge that we have a severe, severe problem. If you go back to the 2000 election to today, you know, we haven't had that many presidential elections, and more than half of them have involved one side claiming the other side cheated and that the election was stolen.
Yeah, what's the exception to that? 2008?
Barack Obama. Yeah, the Barack Obama.
Maybe 2012
elections.
As
yeah,
well.
Yeah, the two Barack Obama elections, pretty much everyone agreed he won.
Yeah.
Every other one, it's been a question. Hillary Clinton said the election was stolen. Bill Clinton, George Bush and the Al Gore side claimed that the election had been stolen.
John Kerry in 2004, people forget that. He said the same thing.
Exactly. And so there's always, we can't have a free society and that going on. And so I think my main appeal, I think that needs to come from both sides, but my appeal to both sides would be, look, if we can all at least agree we need a society that's functioning, we need to believe in the elections, we need to have some, we all want that.
I'd hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so. And if we don't solve this problem, of figuring out what is real and what isn't real, and if we can't agree at least on the basics of that, we are not, our country is not going to survive. I don't know how many more contested elections, you know, we can have before the whole thing just completely implodes. And the Democrats are flirting with that. We've seen that in recent news stories where they're starting to allege that Russian disinformation that's coming out on the internet about Tim Walz, and there's other stories that have been floating around, that it's all to help Donald Trump win, and that they're doing that because Trump's going to help them in the war in Ukraine and all this stuff. We can't continue going down this road or America will not survive. So on the one side, we need to be watching for this stuff and take it seriously. We can't ignore it when these kinds of campaigns are occurring. But we also we have to all agree that making truth the center of it, not just whatever we see, it fits into our agenda, right? Finding the truth has to be the main thing for us all, or else America is done.
We need less our truth and more the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
There actually is a truth. Justin Haskins, the new book is Propaganda Wars, How the Global Elite Control What You See, Think, and Feel. And it's available right now. Be sure to grab a copy wherever you get your books. And, of course, Justin writing this with our own Glenn Beck. So it's one you're going to definitely enjoy. Justin, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, too.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
You can get daily updates on social media and at glenbeck.com/pulsecast for, of course, the Pulsecast, which is a summary of data experts, they're in their election models, polling averages, and prediction markets that give you one sort of sense as to where they are saying, at least, the election stands right now. Another good day for Donald Trump yesterday. Donald Trump now rises to 53.06% chance of winning, as opposed to Kamala Harris at 46.94% chance of winning. Again, I would caution that this is a pretty much toss-up election, very, very close. It doesn't seem to be possible at this point that you're going to see these numbers at least indicate some blowout. But right now, Donald Trump has the momentum and the lead. You'd rather be Trump than Harris at this point, and that's for sure. Okay, another really interesting poll came out. And, this is from USA Today, talking about USA Today Suffolk University poll, talking about what does the podcast appearance actually mean to these candidates. About 25% of voters say they've heard these candidates on a podcast, and the results are quite interesting. 51 of the people who have heard Kamala Harris on a podcast, okay? So you're listening to a podcast, you've heard her on there. What does her appearance mean to you? Only 13% said it made no difference in their vote at all, okay? 51% said that what they saw or heard made them less likely to vote for Kamala Harris. Only 34% said what they saw made them more likely to vote for Harris. On the other side of this, for Trump, it's kind of the reverse. 49.5% said what they saw made them more likely to vote for Trump. Only 28% said what they saw made them less likely to vote for Trump. And 21% said it made no difference. This is why Trump is on every podcast he can get on right now. And he's going to be coming up on Joe Rogan. They taped that, I believe, on Friday. Could be one of the big moments late in the election. We'll see how that goes. And we'll certainly cover that on Monday. We talk a lot about polls on this program. Let me give you a poll question. You think our country's going in the right direction? Or does it feel like everything's kind of falling apart right now? If you're feeling alarmed, if you've answered, it seems like things are falling apart, you are not alone. In fact, Americans from all walks of life have taken action to prepare for whatever is coming next. And that starts with having an emergency food supply. Storing food in your home is the right thing to do because we are living in crazy times and it's good to be prepared for them, no matter what it is. It explains why so many people are doing this and preparing. Right now, you can get ready as well. A 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. It comes with delicious foods like creamy stroganoff, honey wheat bread, mushroom rice pilaf. The entire kit offers over 2,000 calories every day. The food kit lasts up to 25 years. Who knows what our country is going to look like by then? But when that day comes, you will be ready if you go to preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. Get your 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply right now. Preparewithstew.com. It's preparewithstew.com. I want to get to 3 important stories. I only got about 2 minutes to do it, so let's get going. Kamala Harris vowing to double federal minimum wage to $15. I don't know why it's not $30 or $45 or $1,000 an hour, but she only wants to do $15 for some reason. This is something, of course, they've kind of talked about for a long time. It's part of their giveaway money for votes program, which they've been just trying to do constantly for the past year or two. Of course, the minimum wage doesn't work. It's not a policy that is helpful to people. It winds up hurting the people. It's designed supposedly to help. But of course, that makes no difference. It does sound good to people. It's a popular program. So saying you're going to hike it is always good politics, seemingly, even though it's nonsensical. The AP is calling Trump a racist yet again, this time for hurling a string of insults at Harris, including lazy, a racist trope against black people, which is honestly news to me because I've been called lazy many, many times in my life. And I am as boring and white as you can possibly be. I will say, if you ever watched Dazed and Confused, those people seem like they were energetic. Most of them were white. Lazy is kind of a insult to everybody. But apparently that now only means black people here. Now, I will say, it might not be laziness. In fact, I doubt it is laziness, frankly. I would probably disagree with Donald Trump. But what I will note is that she has now taken 2 full days off with 2 weeks left in the election. Today, she's off, too. She's got 1 appearance tonight. Nothing during the day. No campaigning. No campaigning yesterday. There's 2 weeks before a presidential election. What the hell is she doing? I don't understand. Then you got a 78-year-old guy who's running for president against you, who's at event after event after event after event. They've done dozens more events than Harris Walls have, including one with Tulsi Gabbard. She says she's now joining the GOP. This is at a Trump rally in North Carolina yesterday. Kind of a shocking development from a Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer and leader of his campaign just a few years ago. Now here we are. She's now a member of the GOP. Times change. Election night is right around the corner. You're going to want to be a member of Blaze TV to experience it, because you're going to join myself and all the other Blaze TV hosts in our coverage of the 2024 presidential election. This is your chance to be part of something amazing. This election night, Blaze TV is going to have boots on the ground across the country with our correspondents delivering the pulse of the night straight from where the action is happening. All you have to do is subscribe, and you can experience this pivotal night with us. At Blaze TV, we speak the truth, no spin, no filters, just real talk, breaking down what's happening in real time. We'd love to have you to be a part of it. Go to blazeelection.com/stew. Get $40 off right now. blazeelection.com/stew. Get $40 off today.